Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views. Opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
I'm Zach Burchie. Joining me, not quite as always, but often enough, Justin Savegas.
Howdy.
And our guests this week, we've got some special guests here from Funimation. We've got the director of DVD, Blu-ray, and video production, Clarine Harp. Hey, Clarine.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
And we've also got the manager of DVD, Blu-ray, and video production, Matthew O'Hara.
How you doing, guys?
Pretty good. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. I guess people can sort of guess what it is we're going to talk about here. But Justin, you're the video guy. So I go ahead and, you know, take it away, I guess.
Okay. Well, I just kind of wanted these guys on the call because they, of all people, know what it's like to churn out a ridiculous number of discs a month. And I think a lot of fans don't really truly understand what goes into the process. So, first of all, there are scorpions involved. I did not know this.
Yes. Funimation recently had a scorpion infestation due to the heat and drought.
Yeah.
We've only had one known casualty.
Casualty?
Someone got stung when they put on their jacket because there's Holy a scorpion crap. Hiding inside.
Are they dead?
Nobody told me this. Should I be... watching
Oh, you're just finding out about this, Matt? Sorry.
And I'm afraid of them, so.
Don't worry. I don't think they're in your office.
Right. Yeah. Wait, how big are these scorpions? How many of them? Is that person dead?
No, that person, it was fine. It was just a minor sting. I've only personally seen five. That's all.
Only five.
That's 10 too many. Exactly. I want to see negative scorpions in my life.
So only seen five, and then there were the two big spiders that are the size of my hand.
Texas not for people.
So, that's an unknown danger of production, apparently.
Holy crap.
Sounds like a horror movie, anyway.
getting to actually what we do. So why don't we just start off by, and start off with Clarine, just explaining what their day-to-day entails.
Day-to-day, at least for me personally, is very, very different. It varies a lot. In addition to managing my part of the department, I also function as our producer. So that does everything from helping coordinate with, you know, the subtitle supervisor, translation supervisor, writing menu instructions, proofing menus, planning extra features, the whole nine yards. So I work very closely with Matt because his team does all of the authoring, video and audio compression, quality control, and video engineering. So it's pretty complicated, and every day it's something utterly different from the previous day. So it's hard to explain what a typical day is like. So I don't know.
So you're doing more supervising of all of the entire process.
Exactly. So I get to go to the marketing meetings, discuss with them what the branding is like, where they'd like to see things, and I figure out what our budget is for extra features, and I place all those requests. Also look through the Japanese DVDs just to see what they have and place those requests as well.
And Matt, you're basically, you get all the stuff in the marching orders and then your team just pretty much makes everything.
Yeah, that's right. My background is comes from the authoring side. So I've developed the workflow and templates for authoring for both the DVD and the Blu-ray. As well as the guidelines and templates for our video and audio compression. And what I've been involved with most now is dealing with the production side of restoration and also managing our equipment and a lot of the infrastructure we need to make it all work.
Right. And you guys have some pretty serious equipment.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's it takes a lot of power to do to do this stuff in quantity. It's a lot of video, a lot of audio.
If someone were to use your gear starting from scratch and just wanted like one workstation to do it all on, how much would you say they'd be spending?
How much they'd be spending? Oh, I would. And we're just talking about workstations, not counting all the software and all that. But
all that, everything, big, just start to finish.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the HP workstations, and we have a lot of those here. And they make a really nice machine, and we use it for all our we use their workstations for most of our different processes, authoring, compression, and almost everything else too that's on the Windows side. And things that are on the Mac side, obviously we use Mac Pros. Right. So you're looking at several thousand dollars for a workstation powerful enough to just run a lot of processing, multiplexing for authoring. For compression, video compression takes a lot of CPU horsepower. So those are pretty much like you top out the machine at the maximum CPU and memory you could possibly do. So those can get up there in price. And you can go on HP's website and see what you can configure. And, they go up, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 plus, if you want to be able to encode in volume at the highest quality possible.
And that's without any specialty software or hardware or any of the authoring.
The professional authoring software is it's not really a secret. You can contact the companies who make it between Sonic, CinemaCraft, Sony, and it can get pretty pricey. So in the tens of thousands. So it's not a cheap software to get involved with on the high end, but it works really well, and it does the job, and the quality is what we need, and the stability, spec compliance is very important. So that's what our vendors, their software allows us to do.
We'll go into the spec compliance issues and all the other lovely things that can go wrong a little later. But first, I guess between the two of you, why don't you walk us through start to finish what happens with a new property? Say, product manager marches in, hey, let's get started on fill in the blank. What happens next?
Okay, what happens next, that's where I step in at the very beginning. We receive the green light to start production for basically once we sign a contract or once we receive materials. And the first thing that we would like to do is translate and subtitle that show. So from there, the first set of translations goes to both the ADR department so they can do their script adaptation for the English dub. And the same script also goes over to the subtitlers, especially in cases where we are doing a simulcast. We also like to have our episodes online as soon as possible. So we start that whole process. And meanwhile, I'm planning out the release with the marketing department, home video, sales, everyone else. I'm checking the Japanese disc for extra features, deciding which US extra features we can make based on our budget. Writing the menu instructions, picking out the loops based on the tone and feel of the brand, and a number of those things. Once I have all of the elements together, which are basically we're scheduling in all the video, the audio, all the components, that's when I hand them over to Matt. So I'm trying not to go too in-depth because this is actually a very long process. I don't want to bore you guys to death, but there's a lot involved in it. A lot of day-to-day questions that come up, we could be nitpicking over one little comma placement or the way the phrase is translated for hours. So it gets to be a little bit tedious, but bear in mind, this is not a linear process. We're working on a lot of shows at the same time. So I don't get to just see one show start to finish. So it's hard for me to tell people exactly how long it takes to produce one single release because we could be working on 50 all at once. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh my God, I can't imagine having to juggle that many shows at once. Okay, so you have all the materials together, you have the subtitles, and I imagine, you have HD cam tape from Japan.
Yes.
And so what next?
So what next? Basically, if we have all the subtitles, the materials, once they arrive, get split up between different departments. Also, the editing department is within ours. So what'll happen, the editors need to conform the tapes. They need to go ahead and apply the credits. As they're done, they're also being conformed for the production department. Now, I'm apart from that, so I really don't know what file types they're using for recording or anything like that. After everything has been dubbed, the English audio has been mixed and turned into the editing department. Everything gets laid back. So they provide all of the audio and video to actually Matt's group, which is includes video and audio compressionists. And Matt, do you want to kind of explain how that's done and what compression is, just in case?
Oh, yeah. So depending on many factors, you know, because we have to consider, I guess for audio, is not so much. I was thinking, you know, for video compression, we have to account for what's going on the disk, how many languages of audio. The audio is usually pretty straightforward. But we pull that, we kind of compile a document that basically looks at all of the different elements audio and video wise, and we create what we would call a bit budget, which is basically allows us to determine, you know, what settings we need to put in for our encoders to basically maximize the quality for what we have available on the disk, meaning, you know, and typically that means we put as many bits as we can toward the video and the audio to fill the disk. So we try our best to keep the quality as high as possible. So once we have kind of run the numbers, because it takes so long to encode, you can't just randomly, feed in just guess, because, you know, if you go over, you've wasted a lot of time. We have to re-encode again. And if you encode your settings too low, you might be okay fitting on the disk, but then you kind of start to look at jeopardizing quality. So so we try to find a balance there. And we have a system that I think we've worked that out pretty well. And then once that's documented, our compressionists will run our encoders. And typically for our Blu-rays and for our DVDs, we use Dolby as our primary format. And we use the Dolby Digital for all our DVDs, stereo and 5.1. And we use the Dolby True HD for all of our Blu-rays. And the nice thing about the True HD on Blu-ray is that it is a lossless format. So there is no quality loss from the original source.
Now, the by bit budget, just to give an example, say you have, you know, seven or eight episodes on a disc, and you have, you know, a finite amount of space on that disc, say 50 gigs, it's just figuring out the math as to how much to give it so you don't go over.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it does differ every time because, you know, there are there could be a show where the audio is just stereo. There could be a disc where we have both stereo and 5.1. We have English and Japanese. So there's a lot to consider, you know, and the 5.1 is six channels where the stereo is only two. Occasionally we have mono from older sources, so that's only one channel. So there's different channel configurations of the audio will depend on the size. And then we'll adjust our video accordingly as well so we can maximize the space there. And it's not just also maximizing for the size of the disc, but also for the bandwidth of the player. So a Blu-ray can output roughly 48 megabits per second. So, you know, even if we had the space to spare, if we just ran everything up to the max saying we have plenty of room, then it wouldn't be spec compliant and it would fail at the multiplexing process because it's exceeding the bandwidth of the disk. So that's another factor as well, where it can only go so high before it's out of spec and it won't work.
Right. And Blu-ray is notoriously picky about what's compliant and what's not.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yes.
All right. So you have all the assets encoded, and then what?
Well, so I kind of touched on the audio and the video there as well. Oh, and by the way, for the video, for DVD, we're talking about MPEG-2, which is a format been around for a long, long time. It works on Blu-ray as well, but we are using the much higher quality MPEG-4 AVC format, which takes much longer to encode, runs on a much higher-end encoder, but the quality is arguably much, much better, and we spend a lot of time with that. So that kind of covers our audio, our video. The subtitles we have to have generated. So once the subtitlers take the translations, and they have their own process. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Clarine. I guess you could jump in any time about how they get to that point, but they do end up exporting subtitle files in the formats we need. So we'll very often.
Yeah, and my job as producer, and more or less I'm a project manager, so I'm gathering all of the elements together to author just to hand off to Matt and the rest of the authoring team. So the subtitlers will send me their exports, and I will gather basically all the information in one place and let them know that it's ready.
I see.
So an interesting thing about subtitles, let's say we're working on a Blu-ray and DVD concurrently. So we're working on the same show, same source. And another interesting thing to consider is that, you know, we might have a HD cam or otherwise HD source, but it's being output for both DVD and for Blu-ray. So you could have the 24-frame progressive format for Blu-ray, which is ideal. But for DVD, it still has to conform to a standard definition NTSC spec, or PAL if we were doing PAL, but we're mostly doing NTSC. So we have to do a conversion process where we down convert and encode separately for DVD. And that also goes for the subtitles. So we'll generate subtitles that are timed and of a resolution for Blu-ray, and then as well for DVD. The quality for DVD subtitles is much reduced compared to Blu-ray. Blu-ray gives us a full 256 shades of gray with transparency, so we can have a much smoother looking font, where with DVD it's much more crude. So you get a boxier kind of font, but it's kind of the limitation of the technology. So it's an interesting process to make sure that those conversions are happening, because we will very often have to deal with multiple formats simultaneously. Different frame rates as well. The DVD runs at 29.97 frames per second, and then the Blu-ray will run at the progressive format, which is 23.976. So it can get a little confusing, and part of the challenge is to make sure that all the specs are correct and that everyone's on the same page. We're dealing with very different groups dealing with subtitling versus people dealing with audio, people dealing with video. And then our authors have to pull all those pieces together and multiplex and program it so it all works seamlessly. And I haven't even mentioned the menus, which yes. is quite an involved process. And I'm just amazed at what our designers come up with, some really neat stuff. And we slice up all the graphics they come up with for the different menus, which, of course, are also very different for DVD and Blu-ray.
So when we talk about authoring, what we're really talking about is more or less programming.
Yeah, it's not as complex as, developing, a complete software application. However, it is complex enough where it does require a significant amount of time and knowledge. There's a kind of machine language. It's like a low-level programming language that DVD players and Blu-ray players operate in. And we have to kind of learn that language. And the authoring software allows us to, put in that code so that we can, I guess in the simplest form, is make sure that, when you stick the disc in, it knows where to go and it knows what to play. And you're going to see your trailers and you're going to see your different legal and warnings. And and then once it goes to the menu, it has to have that interactivity so that it knows which button you're pressing. And it knows which audio and subtitles you selected, and then when you hit play, it's going to play what your selections are. So what might seem like a simple process from the end user can get quite complex, and there's a lot of opportunity to make the disc not work. So we have to make sure that all of that code is working correctly, and then it would be great if, authors were perfect and all the content was flawless, but we have extensive quality control to make sure that everything's working perfectly.
Yeah, Justin, you're a big proponent of quality control.
Just a bit.
I like to say there's a reason I can sleep at night, and it's knowing that we have quality control checking everything we put together.
I do want to touch on quality control a little bit as well.
Get there.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. We will get there. Once you have a copy, authored, and I imagine you burn it on recordable just to test it, right?
For our DVDs, we use recordable check discs. We actually have a way of doing emulation for the Blu-ray side, which is very cool. And it's a system from Sony that allows us to create a virtual disc and stream that directly to our quality control technicians.
Okay, so give me a nightmare scenario when all this happens. What are some of the big things that can go wrong? What are the first things you look for?
Oh, what can go wrong? Lots can go wrong, and that's why it's important to, that we check things very carefully. I almost don't know where to begin on that. There's so many potential problems that you could have that you need to avoid. I don't know if specifically you had something in mind or, anywhere from, like I mentioned, programming errors could crash the disk, from the videos, the wrong specification. So you could have audio or subtitles go out of sync or display incorrectly. You could have audio be the wrong channels. You could have things, so there's a lot of different aspects of production where you really have to know what you're doing, and our quality control people need to check things carefully to make sure it's all correct. So pretty much anything could go wrong at any point,
Yikes. So I guess then for Clarine, could you walk us through maybe a truncated Cliff Notes version of your QC process? Like how big is the laundry list of things to check?
They have to check everything. And one thing that I do want to back up a little bit as far as the QC process is concerned, we can hand somebody in QC a checklist of items to look at, but it goes a little bit deeper than that. For example, from the subtitler's perspective, they are given a very large subtitle guidelines document that basically tells them, okay, when you're subtitling a series, these are the standardized way that we do everything. For example, like when to use italics, when to use capital letters, down to the types of punctuation that we use. It is important that up front that we standardize certain processes because quality control will check based on one standard. You see what I'm saying? So they will have to turn in all those materials. At the same time, quality control also has created their own standardized guidelines on what to check. So we do have, as Matt mentioned, we do have a lot of our DVDs and Blu-rays templated. So we do have certain ways that we program certain things. So if maybe, you hit a certain button on your remote just to check the disc and it doesn't do exactly what you're used to it doing, that's when you write it up on the QC report. So there are a lot of things involved. They have to check very carefully all of the programming, basically try to deliberately break the disc or crash it just to make sure there are no problems. They also have to carefully watch all of the video, listen to the audio. They have to do QC on the menus, the subtitles, the credits, everything that's on that disc to make sure there's no problem. Now, sometimes it's kind of hard. They've caught some things that I was really surprised that even I didn't see. And things like reversed frames, little dropouts.
Reverse frames?
Yeah, reverse fields, sorry. That's happened before. It hasn't happened in a while, but it has happened before. And audio dropouts, pops, things of that nature.
I see. Now, back in the early days of DVD and definitely in the earlier days of Blu-ray production, we had a ton of compatibility issues. Is that still something that's in the forefront when you QC?
We have different ways of dealing with that, and I think you are absolutely right when you say in the early days, I'd say back in the kind of 06, 07 time period, it was like you would want to check a disc on as many different players because, there could be one player that would be run correctly and then another player that would have an issue. It would freeze up or the video would break up or it just wouldn't load the disc or it would sit there for 10 minutes trying to load your disc and trying to nail down what those problems were. Fortunately, from the software side of things, many of those issues were hardware related. However, we still need to make sure that we conform to the official spec. So there is a very large encyclopedia-sized book of specifications that that we need to adhere to, and the authoring software tries to direct you in the right way so that you're not violating that specification. But we also have verification software that goes through and does an analysis and checks for any kind of spec problems. So what we're talking about are not problems where we point the disk in the wrong place, and you could tell the play button to stop the disk, and that would not be a spec error. That would just be a programming error, and that's up to the authors and working with our quality control to work out. So those are the things where it's by spec is correct, but functionally is not doing what we want. On the other hand, we have some things where it might work on one player, but it's actually out of the specification. So another player could hang up. Sometimes there are situations where the audio will drift out of sync because of the video encoding problem that may have not been noticed by watching it on one player. But the verification tools that we have allow us to make sure that all of the assets and all of the programming meets the official Blu-ray disc specification. So we do all of those steps.
I see. So occasionally something will slip through the cracks and not be caught, and then, suddenly someone on a forum somewhere goes, oh, this disc has something wrong with it. What happens? Could you walk us through what happens in a scenario like that?
It really depends on what's wrong. It's very rare that there is an actual functionality issue or a video issue, but it has happened before. So what we will do, we'll do a running change, and I believe there's only been one recall. Matt, do you remember? I think we've only one time.
Yeah.
And that was a video problem. But more often than not, what I find, because sifting through, and I've been here for about 6.5 years now, and sifting through regular comments, a lot of comments that people make are not actual functionality issues. It's very subjective comments about things.
Right. Things like, I didn't like how you translated this.
Exactly. So that's more or less what we get. It's very rarely an actual problem, but we do check through every single issue. If I receive an email about it, I will address it.
And
cool.
Just something to add real quick to that was that there are occasionally issues that come up that are actually player related. And it's something that part of using the professional authoring softwares that we do have resources of and contacts that basically we're only one or two steps away from getting a problem communicated to a manufacturer. So there are situations where someone will bring up an issue where something wasn't playing correctly, audio wasn't playing correctly, or was out of sync. And it, if those issues make it to me, I do communicate those things so that they are addressed. So information does get to the player manufacturers one way or another.
Cool. Yeah, I personally have actually sent a BDR to Panasonic in Japan.
Oh, wow.
That was in the early days. I don't think that happens anymore. usually, I'm sure they'll have someone in the States to go, oh, this isn't our fault. This is something you did.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So you guys have to deal with a huge influx of masters and assets coming in from Japan. What are some of the things that can happen? Like, Japan will send you the wrong tape, or can you tell us about some of the things that can happen there?
Okay, on the material side, basically anything could happen. Sometimes we receive materials where the music and effects are not separated. So obviously we'd like to dub our properties into English, and that makes it a challenge. Sometimes we receive a video that's different from what we'd expect. It really could be anything, Justin. Any problem you can imagine going wrong, and then some that I would never have dreamed would have happened, have occurred in the past. So that's why sometimes we do have to push releases on occasion due to materials-specific concerns.
Right.
But,
And those
could be more specific, but it's hard to know where to begin.
And it's interesting now that as time goes on, in the past, we had a limited number of tape formats. So if you receive something on, say, a Digibeta, which is, a standard digital format for standard definition, you're pretty much, you know what the specification is. And that also translated to HD. But now we have, we have digital delivery that's kind of emerging. And there are many different codecs, formats, resolutions. And when you're sending digital files, which I'm not saying is what we mostly receive, but I'm saying we're starting to see different types of formats come in file formats. So it's not actually getting any easier. It's getting more complex with the amount of potential issues that could happen.
Were there tales of you receiving masters and you're like, this is clearly a mistake. This is clearly screwed up.
It can happen.
Yeah, it can happen. Many years ago, and I just don't remember the name of the show at this time, but many years ago, one of our licensors had a bad deck. And whenever they sent over a bunch of Digibeta tapes, there were all sorts of video and audio dropouts riddled throughout the tape. So we did have to ask for brand new masters, and then that took some time because they had a bunch of decks in their deck room and they weren't sure which one it was.
Ugh.
So they had to troubleshoot that.
Do you ever just get a box from Japan and it's just full of scorpions?
Now we might.
Yeah, you might.
I hope not. I don't know if they have them there.
So tell us a little bit about upscales. I know this is a little bit, it's not as contentious a subject as it once was. Maybe we can talk about it now.
Okay.
What are upscales? What's the process like? How do you decide to do one, et cetera?
Okay. Upscale specific. The decision-making process on what to upscale and what not to upscale depends on a bunch of different factors. It could be the first thing we have to ask, can the video be upscaled? And so, Matt, you can probably explain a little bit better than I could.
Yeah.
Can and can't be upscaled.
And I think the thing to clear up right away about upscaling, upconversions, upresolution, there's described many ways, but basically taking a source that's in the standard definition and doing, through a variety of processes, outputting an HD master from it. Now, you know, a native source that is produced in HD is six times the resolution, mathematically, six times the resolution of a standard definition. So pixel by pixel, a Blu-ray has, in each and every frame, six times as much information as what would be in a DVD on standard definition. So that's the main difference. Now, obviously, when we're upscaling, we're taking what's a standard definition source and outputting in HD. So I think it goes without saying that a native HD source is always going to be better. So that kind of goes, that's kind of just something to clear up, that goes without saying. So, but what has happened is there's a lot of material out there that only was ever produced or is only ever available in the standard definition. So then the big question, I think, is whether there's a benefit for it to be on Blu-ray or not. And what we're able to do is pretty amazing. Some of the processes to convert to an HD master allows us to present what was in standard definition in HD in such a way that it's still going to have far better quality than what was possible on the DVD. A DVD, one way or another, standard definition has to be get converted to an interlaced source, a standard definition NTSC output. On a Blu-ray, that's progressive. So every single image is a complete frame, so it's much smoother. By using the capabilities of compression for Blu-ray at a much higher quality, we're able to have less distortion on the video, as well as we're capable of doing the lossless audio. So there is a lot of potential there for a much higher quality product on the Blu-ray, even though we all know that the source was originally in standard definition. So, did you have questions more specifically on the process, or that's my general take on it?
What's an example of something that can't be upscaled?
Oh, that's right. Something that cannot. Okay, so there are, say, for example, we might have some material where it was produced in widescreen and then letterboxed with inside of a standard definition frame. So the resolution really is not there. There's not a whole lot of extra information. So, you know, we'll do a lot of testing and we'll try as hard as we can to you know, evaluate different material, you know, as we're asked. So if in production we're hit up with a, you know, potential that could be put on Blu-ray or upscaled to HD, there is from time to time material where it just it's just not suited to be converted to HD. So, and it's usually, you know, a lack of resolution, and SD video has the fields. So there's a, you know, a lot of fielded video where every other line is, you know, where the frames are separated. So you have motion across every other line for that, you know, if it can't be corrected and it can't be smoothed out and converted in such a way that it's going to look great on high resolution, we'll sometimes pass on those.
I see. Now, are there, I know you guys actually went back and redid one or two earlier upscales. What have you learned in the process of doing these?
Specifically, Matt, I think he's talking about Shampoo.
Right.
Oh, yes. That actually did get redone. There was our engineering team and our group that does remastering will constantly evaluate our processes, and I think they're pretty good, and they have been very good for a long time here, but occasionally we'll find a better way of doing something, or, you know, a way of processing the video that preserves clarity. And I think with, was it Shampoo I think we were talking about?
Yes.
That one had a certain level of intentional grain or grittiness to the source, and we were able to find a way to preserve that better. So I know there were some complaints that it didn't come through as well, and what's available now is, I think, a better process.
Yeah, this actually kind of comes up a lot where, you know, you guys have a process more or less down, but people are still complaining about a SKU that was released 3 years ago or more even.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of par for the course for people bitching about Funimation. I mean, they cling to, like, video problems from DVDs produced in, like, 2001. So, I mean,
I still get emails about those.
I'm sure, yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of par for the course. You can't really not expect the fans to just keep bitching about old stuff or continue to prescribe problems that have been long since fixed. That's just nature fandom, I think.
Yeah.
Well, so in the interest of fairness here, if someone brings up or there's some sort of adjustment to a process, how long does it take for fans to see it? Like, how long does it take to work through that chain of releases?
It really depends on what it is. It depends. Right. Whether you're talking about video, whether you're talking about audio or subtitles, it really just depends on which part of the process we're having to affect. One thing that that I get a lot that's very interesting whenever I go out to conventions, one question is, hey, Clarine, you said you changed this process. You sent me an email a week ago, and I went to go buy a brand new DVD from Best Buy, and now it's not changed. And then that's when I explained to them that there is a replication time. We need some time to fix the process, and it also goes through the replication process. So it's not as if, you know, somebody can email us and say, hey, can you fix this for the next release? Well, the next release might be something that is not coming out for a couple of months because we've already worked that far in advance. So the releases that they're wanting to be fixed have already been packed out and shipped to stores.
How long is that lead time from you guys, like, absolute finishing a disc to seeing it pop up on store shelves?
About a couple months. A
couple months?
Yeah. I would say on average.
Now, the Japanese have started doing their own upscales as well, most derided, I think, by a lab in Japan known as Q-Tech, who actually is one of the biggest post-production facilities in Japan. Do you guys always use Japanese upscales when they exist, or do you guys prefer to make your own?
It really depends on what it is, because sometimes that's not our decision to make. Sometimes we receive their masters and we are informed that we're going to be using their upscale. So that does happen sometimes. So we do prefer to do our own upscales whenever possible.
a little more control over it, at least.
Exactly. And also, if there's something wrong, then we can fix it. If there's something glaring.
All right. So owing to, you know, all the feedback that you guys get, is there an example of that you can think of something where, you know, the fan said, oh, I want it this way, and you looked at it and you're like, yeah, that seems like a pretty good adjustment, and you made it. Anything you can point to that came from the fans?
A lot of things, actually. A lot of things have come from the fans. They requested the Dolby True HD lossless audio, the encoding. So we did that. We've made a lot of changes. So we do listen to a lot of feedback. I do check forums. I get all the emails forwarded to me from feedback@Funimation.com, and I do look into everything. It's just the only thing is it's just the time that it takes to look into something. You know what I'm saying? So right. Sometimes I get an email then, again, a week later saying, hey, why didn't you fix this or why didn't you change it? And it's not that we don't care. It just does take a bit of time because we have a very, very large department and a lot of processes, a lot of moving parts that have to change. But we're constantly evaluating all of our processes, and we don't like to continue doing things the same way we've always done them just because that's the way we did it. We're always looking for ways to improve efficiencies.
Awesome.
So whatever feedback people have, we're totally open to it.
And that one example, I think the Shamploo is a good example of something where, you know, we were able to have an opportunity to improve on an existing product. And we'll use, you know, a lot of feedback. And as we get more experienced, you know, evaluate our processes and always try to make the highest quality process we possibly can. You know, keeping in mind we're doing, I think Clarine might have mentioned, you know, could be up to 50 things at once happening here. And if somebody's got the blinders on looking at one frame of one show, you know, we are looking at that plus many other things simultaneously. So that is a challenge. But we're, you know, for me at least, you know, I always try to keep quality in mind and to try to refine our processes, not just so we can do more, but so that we can give better attention to as much as we can.
Actually, on that, speaking of quality and fan feedback, I want to ask about the Fooly Cooly Blu-ray. Which had a mountain of contentious and completely differing feedback from people saying it looked great, from people saying it looked like ass, people pointing to screen caps of a Japanese release and saying it doesn't look as good as this. And while I was pleased with the quality of it, it did look a bit soft. And I'm curious, in something like that where it's like an early DigiPaint show, is that literally the case where like there's kind of nothing you can do to make it look better than it does on that disc?
There could potentially be limitations of the source we have to work with.
Well... And also, I believe that was one where we used the masters that we were provided.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what people. But people will take like screen caps on their particular rig where it looks a little different, and they'll say it's not as good. I mean, that must get kind of frustrating because you're like, look, you're playing it in a certain way. You've got your contrast up too high.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Futzed with screenshots and stuff like that. So that must be kind of frustrating, but. So in other words, like that release, people might have said, look, this looks a little soft, but there's no way to make that show look any better than it does on that disc. Or there might be, but who even knows what it would be?
Yeah. Yeah. You're right on that. There was, we did use the masters that we were provided. So the trouble is it's hard for me to tell sometimes when people are posting screenshots because there's so many ways to manipulate the color.
Yeah.
And online. And so digitally, I could never really tell. So we do look into it. But at the same time, we worked with what we had in this case.
Right. And you got to go with your own judgment.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
and part of the process of, you know, we're talking quality is for the most part, we're trying to preserve what we get. So, you know, when one of our licensors sends us content, you know, our intent is not really to modify it or to change the look of it. We're trying to preserve it as best as possible. So any technical processes that we employ, such as, you know, doing the upscaling, it's to preserve quality and to, as opposed to really making some major change that could, you know, be looked at as a creative decision. So, you know, when we receive whatever masters we receive, that's what we work with. And, you know, our intent will always be to make it look as true to the original as we can and correct as possible.
So to that end, have there been any little tweaks that you've made recently that we can, you know, look forward to seeing in the near future?
Well, there's the big one.
Well, the big one, yes.
And feel free to ask about something else, but the big the big one here is the Dragon Ball Z, and that's about the most amount of effort we've put into anything to date. I'm sure from a labor point of view, our engineers are working with every single frame of the entire series and with a brand new transfer. So.
And I want to also, Matt, I want to clarify to make sure, because I've seen this on a few forums, in case anyone's curious, this is about the Dragon Ball Z Blu-ray. A lot of people have been asking if it's an upscale, and it's not. It is a transfer and a restoration and remastering.
So you guys went back to the negatives that you scanned like 3 or 4 years ago for the weird faux widescreen versions.
Yeah, the source of the source is the same when we're discussing film. So the film that was used for the DVD release is the same film, but the way it was transferred for the DVD is a much different process. The Blu-ray we approached it from a much more purist perspective. The aspect ratio is preserved, and not just preserved, but I mean we're getting the original 4x3 image, we're getting that as edge-to-edge as possible. There's not a lot being cut off unless it was intended to be. So you're going to see more image area that was in the original film. The colors are very true to how they originally were. So you'll see a definite a different look to it from the DVD. So... There's some other things that are more apparent that are going to come through. The show was done from a 16mm film source, so there's a lot of grain. And so there's been some processing done, but we didn't remove the grain, but kind of preserved it because it's kind of part of the character of the show. On the DVD, a lot of that's kind of washed out or softened. So there's a lot more detail you can see, and some of that detail is interesting to look at. But it's more true to the original. But I'd say most of the after the film has been retransferred, so we're working with a facility here to take the film and give us new HD masters, and those HD masters internally here, we have a system internally that our engineers are going through frame by frame and are able to correct all different aspects of some of the, you could call them flaws or specific issues that. That are present with older film. The image shakes. There's flicker depending on the quality of the film stock that was used. And a lot of those things can be corrected. And if it's possible, and there's room there where we can make an adjustment so that it looks true to how it was supposed to look, we're going to make those changes. A lot of small scratches, dust and dirt, those kind of things are all being looked at frame by frame. So we've never looked at anything quite as closely as this one. So
it sounds almost like this is pretty close in terms of scope and sort of attention to detail as you get with like Disney when they release one of their films from the 50s on Blu-ray and it shows up looking like it was made yesterday. It sounds kind of like a similar process to that in terms of just a real spit shine, real restoration.
Yeah, and the system we're using is, some of the same software and processes that are used for some of those major, major studios like a Disney or somebody like that. So we are using similar systems and processes. So that is true. However, something to keep in mind, like I was saying, that it is it's an older show. It does come from a 16mm film source, so basically we're not going to make it look like it never was on film or it was made yesterday, but kind of make it look as best as it can for what it is.
So more like a Criterion release.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I guess the inevitable question is, how will you guys resell this in 3 years if it's going to look like that on Blu-ray? There's nowhere better. How is there room to improve on this?
Well, considering we will be releasing the Blu-rays for quite some time, just because it's such a labor-intensive process, next generation, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see what comes up, for future technology and future formats. But HD resolution does a fairly good job of capturing all the detail that could be there. You know, I mean, if you go look at it under a microscope, you could say, okay, if we did even higher than HD resolution, maybe we could, you know, there's something more that could be captured there. But a lot of that characteristics of older film comes through very well in HD. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
16 millimeter can be pretty blurry. In fact, I kind of consider the effective resolution of 16 millimeter to be well below 1080p. Are you having to sharpen the image at all?
Well, not really. That is, you know, one of the aspects that we can look at if there's, you know, a softness or, you know, maybe a specific frame was out, you know, the focus is off on one frame. But as far as like sharpness and specifically can potentially be a destructive way of dealing with it. If that's, you know, if you look at I know on some older televisions, if you ran an analog source into your TV, you could move the sharpness really high and it creates a sharp edge. However, that can create kind of like a cookie cutter look or a, you know, kind of create a false beveled edge on characters. And we don't want to distort the image. So it's more of trying to preserve, preserve what we can. So sharpness specifically, we're not trying to increase the sharpness from what it was. But you know, there is a lot of truth to what you're saying about, I think you might have mentioned something about that HD might have be beyond what 16 millimeter could capture. So what HD does is it reveals a little more detail in the imagery, but it also reveals a lot of the characteristics of film. So there's a lot of that grain, a lot of that you're seeing a lot of noise and depth in the film itself. You're going to see more detail that, you know, it'll be very obvious that this is a film. Where on the DVD, some of that film look is kind of softened even more so. So, yes, this new transfer will reveal that it is absolutely a film source. There's not going to be any doubt.
Well, and specifically, hastily produced 1980s Japanese television anime mass market. It's not like the quality is not exactly 100% on the animation to begin with. So you are looking at something that is, I don't want to say junky, but DBZ is not a great looking show to begin with. Like, it's cool and all, but yeah.
Now that you guys can do this, are there any candidates for doing this for other shows?
Shh, don't say that. We'll be working on C for a while.
Well, I would imagine this is justified by the fact that you know you're going to make money on it, hence it's worth the cost, because that can't be a cheap process.
No. It's going frame by frame through 291 episodes for this is extremely labor-intensive, so a lot of our staff is currently taken up working on it.
Yeah, and I guess while we can't really speak to specific future shows that we may do, because at least what I could say here is that what we're accomplishing with Z and it's giving us different aspects to look at that in a detail we may have not looked at before. So there is even more potential for something down the road, other shows to you know, for if restoration is needed, we can add that to our many other processes we're doing for, you know, such as the up conversions and. The capability is there, and Z is it's an educational experience to go through it because there is so many different little things to look at when we are going through every frame. So without really saying any specific show, we have a lot of potential. There's a lot of potential there.
Just kind of learning new tools to add to your arsenal.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Speaking of labor intensive, one thing that I have heard over the years is that you guys are sort of insanely overworked, or at least go through periods where you're insanely overworked. And I know a couple of years ago when you guys were dealing with all that stuff from Sojitz, it got kind of intense around there where you guys are working. The rumor I heard was 12 to 15 hour days. Has that calmed down? Have they let you hire more people? Are you working sane hours? Is it still kind of ridiculous?
It's peaks and valleys, really.
Right.
I can't say that the 12, you know, to 15 hour days have gone away.
Okay.
especially with, you know, working on labor-intensive things like Dragon Ball Z, but it's either feast or famine. Sometimes we get a 40-hour work week, sometimes we don't. And lately we have been working a lot of hours to get some things done.
Right.
So I'm hoping to see the end of that soon, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, and one thing is what I like to tell people is, you know, when this is the kind of work you do for work and it's also what you do for fun, that helps a lot. So, you know, when you have a team of people who really enjoy the production process, and I guess I could only speak really for myself that I, you know, really enjoy this kind of work. And in our team here, we have a lot of people that really enjoy digging into the technical aspects of audio and video, and a lot of fans of anime. So with all of that kind of working together, it even when the workload gets heavy, it's you know, it's the kind of work we love to do.
Right, and to wit, that was sort of my next question was, are there shows that you look forward to working on that you're fans of, or is it, I mean, I can't imagine it doesn't eventually just become a blur of media.
Oh, I think it's a little of both sometimes.
Okay.
But, yeah. And you know, and what's funny, there are some shows that I personally enjoy, but then the shows that I enjoy working on might be completely different because it's a completely different process, or I have to think of a new way of doing things. So those are the shows I enjoy working on the most, even if it wasn't a show that I would enjoy as much watching as a fan.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's you relish the challenge of a project that you might find difficult or require you to get creative at your job. Maybe the show's junk, but it requires you to change your methods, which can be exciting, especially in a professional scenario like that.
Yeah, and that's what makes things more interesting for me. And then I don't mind working as much.
Or a show that you really would love as a fan is a giant pain in the ass behind the scenes and you just want it to be over.
That's never happened.
Oh, I'm sure.
All right. Okay. Okay. Right. So I guess we should go ahead and get to Twitter because we got a lot of questions here. I don't know specifically what this guy's referring to, but you probably will. Okay. Let me try and pronounce this. Kakita Mike asks, Clarine, do you get more questions about working for Funimation or being referenced in something positive?
I hardly get any questions about something positive these days. It used to be the other way around, but that was about 8 or 9 years ago.
Okay, can we get a brief explanation of what the hell this guy's talking about?
Oh, okay, all right. A very dear friend of mine is the artist for a webcomic called Something Positive.
All right,
and I'm featured as, in not really the most flattering manner, as one of the main characters in that webcomic.
Oh, okay.
So that's what he's asking about. So, see, nobody really asks me about that anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah, those were like the Mega Tokyo days. It's a long time ago. All right. The Gray Ghost Net says, what concerns or predictions do you have for how the industry will be affected when Blu-ray recorders become more publicly accessible?
Matt, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I guess that's, you know, under the presumption that, you know, Blu-ray recorders would be used more. We'll see how that goes. I mean, I think a lot of different types of mediums, so I'm not sure specifically why they're focusing on Blu-ray recordable, if that really relates to our shows being released on Blu-ray. I'm not exactly sure.
I was going to say, it's plenty easy to pirate stuff without having a burner.
Yeah, if we're talking about a recorder, I'm thinking of like a video, you know, recording directly a video. We're talking about just burning a Blu-ray media at all.
Yeah,
it's if they're implying the piracy element of it, it's pretty much any protection mechanism that has ever been created has been defeated soon after. So that possibility is there. And it's kind of always present, and that goes for DVD as well. So if that's what they're referring to, with the recordable.
Well, dual-layer BDRs are still oftentimes more expensive than what you're pirating, so.
Yeah, you're kind of spending, you know, a good portion of what you would have spent if you just purchased the show, and then you end up with a, you know, less than ideal copy. And there's really, you know, no real way to, you know, stop someone who's determined. You know, if someone's determined to make illegal copies, they can do it. And I think when Blu-ray came out, it was had the best copy protection available at the time, and it was pretty much defeated within several days.
Yeah.
of the first Blu-rays coming out. So, yes, and you know, the media doesn't cost quite as much. It used to be very expensive, but it's still fairly pricey compared to DVDs.
Plus, I think like the whole thing about, you know, recordable Blu-rays is dedicated people that I've come across that are fairly dedicated pirates. They just stream HD files from their computer to their television or from an external hard drive or something. Gone are the days when you have binders full of burned discs. I think that's sort of over regardless of the format. Not only that, even if that were still the case, once we get to the point where the dual layer Blu-ray blanks are $5 for 100, like we eventually got to with CDRs, we'll already be on to the next thing anyway. So,
yeah, probably.
Okay. All right. Now, we got a lot of questions about this, and so we'll lump them all into one here. People kind of hate your Blu-ray subtitles. They say they probably look fine when authoring on a PC screen, but in a home theater setting, they can be difficult to read. A bolder font and a thicker outline would help. Have you gotten a lot of comments about your Blu-ray subtitles? Because I have kind of noticed that a little bit myself. They're not quite ideal. A thicker outline or something would be good.
Yes, we just started getting these comments within the past few months, so we are looking into it. Like I told you guys, it does take a little while for us to affect any changes if we determine that a change needs to be made. So we have been looking at testing this out. So I don't know. I don't know what else to add to that.
Yeah,
we're looking at it.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, we definitely want to address, and we are looking at. So that's not getting ignored, but the potential is there. And I think I mentioned this earlier. For you know, Blu-ray has a much higher resolution, but the subtitles have also quite a bit more potential for color and contrast. And so, yeah, we do want to make sure that we can do everything we can to make that look as good as it could. So we're definitely evaluating that now.
So in other words, you're on it. Give you a while.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Chuo Dori asks, how far are we off from Funimation releasing the entire series only on Blu-ray? I guess this would just be your opinion.
Ooh, that's a good question. Just an entire series. Basically, it's the... Now, is it just on Blu-ray, not DVD at all?
Yeah.
Or is this as, like, a box set release right out the gate?
Yeah, this is Blue what only. It means, like, Blu-ray only. Like, the only way you can get it is on Blu-ray.
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't even thought of that.
I guess at this point, you'd just be cutting off a revenue source.
There's still a lot of DVD collectors out there, right? Isn't there, Clarine?
There are a lot of DVD
collectors. You wouldn't want to... It seemed to me you wouldn't want to, you know, break up someone's collection suddenly that's been collecting the DVDs, but it's kind of, it'd be interesting to see if that happens. So not so far, right? I mean, we've released, I think, Blu-rays, but that have been previously released on DVD, and then there's a lot of the new ones where we're doing both simultaneously in the combo packs.
Yeah, right. I'm sure you guys follow the industry trends, you know, like any responsible studio would, and once everyone stopped putting things on VHS, everyone followed suit. So you'd have to wait until, I guess, DVD is no longer a viable format.
And exactly, because so many people haven't adopted Blu-ray yet.
Yeah,
so it's just hard to tell.
I remember we got so much crap when we discontinued VHS, and that was like 2003.
Oh God! Mm-hmm. All right. Ikari Gendo wants to know why you used, I think we already know the answer to this, but why did you use SD Masters for Spice and Wolf Season 1 Blu-rays? I assume that's because that's what you got.
That's probably the answer to that. Okay. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
And something to add to the up conversion process is that we wouldn't be up converting something that we already had in a HD source. We're limited by the materials we have. So I guess would think that would go without saying, but, you know, for some people may not know that, you know, there are some shows and parts of some shows that are only ever made available in the standard definition.
So in other words, you're not holding out on anybody.
No, not in that aspect. That's not something we would do intentionally.
Right. Why would you? All right. We touched on this, but DTA 1993 asks, are Blu-rays more difficult to author than DVDs?
Well, the short answer to that is yes.
Longer answer is, oh, God, yes.
Yeah, well, yeah. what's interesting, there are certain aspects of Blu-ray production that might be easier than DVD. But as a whole, most of it is much more time-consuming. The encoding process takes a lot longer. While we've tried internally here to come up with a templated workflow, which is a good thing because it creates a consistent product and makes it easier for our quality control to have to check things. But it's still, you know, they're still in the process. There's a lot more involved and a lot more to consider with Blu-ray. So many different resolutions. You can have different formats on the same disc, where DVD, everything had to conform to one video specification. And, you know, the encoding can take days as opposed to hours with, you know, so there's a lot there we want to get right the first time, so we're not wasting days of redoing something. So a little more care, a little effort, more effort is put into the how we look at doing the Blu-ray, because, you know, if we have to redo something, a mistake could cause a lot more time, where on the DVD it's, you know, can be fixed a little easier. So, yes, there's more to it. More CPU power required on the computers. You know, it's, you know, more involved in the editing process. So pretty much across the board, there's more involved with HD versus SD. And on the authoring side, I guess referring specifically to the code and the multiplexing and creating the masters, there is definitely more to consider.
All right. I this guy's question is kind of snotty. I want to ask it anyway, just because he's talking about something that I did want to touch on. But he says, North Star Blog asks, what is the consumer benefit of buying upscaled Blu-rays of standard definition content? And then he mentions the recent Aniplex release of the Rony Kenshin OVA, which I had a chance to see myself. And he refers to it as an upscale. Now,
yeah, it's not an upscale. It's a new transfer.
Exactly. Well, clearly, Matt, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that.
No, I haven't seen it.
But I agree with you, Justin, in that I think it's the best looking anime I've seen on Blu-ray, probably by a pretty fair margin, at least when they're not doing that shitty video compositing stuff.
Right. Well, that was what, maybe a total of 30 seconds of the whole show.
Well, it's a lot in episode 3. This thing is very fresh in my mind, but
I haven't gotten that far yet.
Yeah. But it looks spectacular. And that's a result of what? Just completely remastering the entire thing?
Well, yeah, they're doing basically what Funny is doing with Dragon Ball Z, with, you know, going back to the film elements.
Okay. So looking at that, people can sort of use that as a touchstone, maybe for what they can expect from Dragon Ball. Maybe not quite at that level of quality like animation, but that's
it is important to know that with Dragon Ball Z, it's a case where we are not taking an old standard definition master we used for the DVD, but going back to the film, doing a new transfer, and then at that point, going through it frame by frame and doing any restoration we can. So it is a true high definition source, and then on top of that, restored. As opposed to upscales are where we have video based standard definition sources that are the only source that exists, the only master available. And so we do our best to put that on Blu-ray in such a way that it'll still have a distinctive advantage over the standard definition DVD. But like I said, you know, I think it's obvious that, you know, nothing, no upscale can touch a true HD source, an HD master. But when we are limited to what we have, that's, you know, what we need to do. So Dragon Ball Z is not that, though. That's going to be a complete HD retransfer and restoration.
I guess to answer the first part of his question, what's the consumer benefit of buying upscale Blu-rays? It does look better. It's not like it looks like garbage or looks worse than the DVD. It does look better. I mean, people are so picky.
And it's a combination of being able to, when we create that HD master, it's not just putting the standard definition source on the Blu-ray, which we actually could. Blu-ray does support standard definition. We could take the very same video. We could even take the same encoded video from the DVD and put it directly on the Blu-ray. That's absolutely technically possible, but that is not what we're doing. So what we're actually doing is taking that source, and standard definition video is interlaced, so we have fielded video. So what used to be, you know, complete progressive solid frames has been split into fielded images for the NTSC spec. We're able to correct that in software so that each image is then encoded and then played back correctly in its progressive format. So it's especially apparent on some of the larger flat panel LCD displays, where they're progressive images by nature. And you'll see a lot more distortion in some of the older DVDs that are kind of the limitation of that technology, where even though they're working from the same master, we're able to produce a much cleaner image by correcting it and then encoding it at a much higher, much higher bit rates on the encoders. So you're not getting as much distortion. So there's a lot of distortion on some older DVDs that once you're playing back on a large high-definition screen, you'll see it. You'll see a lot of these square, blocky patterns, or you'll see this kind of fuzzy noise that's sometimes called mosquito noise. There's all different elements of the limitations of DVD that are not there with the Blu-ray. So it's going to be a higher quality product overall.
All right. B-Takeo asks, you used to have multiple DVD angles to allow playback of original Japanese credits, presumably discontinued due to the loss of picture quality. With Blu-ray, is it possible to do this efficiently? And what kind of extra workload does that put on the authoring process?
That puts an extra workload in a lot of other processes. And that includes the video editing department, quality control, authoring. We actually have not received a comment about angles. This is the first one I've heard in years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, nobody's actually even asked me about it.
While explaining how popular they were.
Yeah. So we haven't evaluated what we would need to change in order to re-add them, since nobody's really said anything.
Dealing with video angles is actually one of the more complex things to deal with for both DVD and Blu-ray. So while technically possible, it is one of the very most challenging and time-consuming things to do. So, you know, we have to look at that as is so much extra production work, you know, is there a real need for that, or a real desire to have that?
Ms. Sousa 2877 asks, Clarine, how did you get involved in voice acting in the first place, considering that you are a producer first?
I'm primarily a producer, but in relation to Funimation, I actually started as a voice actor first.
Okay.
So I got in it just, I met Justin Cook, and I came into audition, and I got a role in Kitty Grade in 2003 and went on from there. Career-wise, I've always been a project manager in various industries, so when a position became available at Funimation, I just wanted to stay here full-time, so I applied and I got it.
And now you have scorpions.
Now I have plenty of scorpions and spiders the size of my hand.
Woohoo!
At least they'll eat the scorpions.
Do they?
Yeah. Oh. They kill each other.
Wild kingdom there.
Death match.
Yep. Okay, you might not be responsible for this, but I'll ask just because I'm a little curious. What's the process for choosing which trailers go on which DVD?
That depends. It's a couple of different things. It's relevance to other titles. Mm-hmm. It's also when it releases, because, for example, we always want to advertise newer releases on a title typically about 2 months in advance. And it also depends on rating. You know, like I wouldn't force a mature rated trailer on like a TV PG title.
Right.
So it's a combination of those three factors. And then I just pick out the trailers. And sometimes marketing will send me some input on those as well.
No written trailers on Dragon Ball Z.
No. Even if I'm tempted to do that.
I was just about to make that exact same joke, so kudos, Justin. All right. Exodore US asks, everyone I know, including Justin, has aspects of Blu-ray authoring that they loathe. What are yours?
Oh, aspects of authoring that are loathed?
That you hate, yeah.
Oh, it's definitely related to some of the time it takes, multiplex time, very long process. You know, like I think you were asking earlier about, you know, like, well, what kind of machines do you need to run this stuff on? And, you know, I said it's like it's still amazing how much time is involved in CPU time when you're trying to multiplex. So multiplex meaning, you know, combining audio and video files together and writing out the specific format for the Blu-ray disc. With DVD, that can go so fast and you can make fixes and churn out more check discs and make little changes here and there very quickly. Blu-ray, it's like you have to be very decisive and it's very time consuming. So there's a lot of management of time there. But I like working on Blu-ray a lot. So I don't know. I like being able to produce something that, you know, I think is probably, in my opinion, to this point, still the highest quality consumer format available until downloads get just a little better. I think Blu-ray is still your best quality. So I don't loathe it too much. I actually enjoy working on a product that I feel is one of the highest quality available.
Fine. Make me look like a complainer.
It's not hard, Justin.
Yeah.
I know.
And I was about to say that, too.
All right. ABCB Tom asks, curious if there's any updates on the HD cam high def tape issue that was impacted by the earthquake.
No, I haven't heard any updates on that, but I do know that some of our licensors have had to change their delivery format with certain materials. It's really hard because that was something, obviously, that nobody anticipated. So they're having to change a lot of processes and deliver digitally in some cases. But really, as to what's going to happen, we have no way to tell. I mean, I don't know. Justin, you might know a little bit better than I do.
I heard a rumor a couple months ago that they had a new factory coming online, but that was months ago, and I haven't heard anything since.
Yeah, see, I haven't heard anything either.
Okay, so we don't know.
Sorry, Thomas.
That's okay. Safer Scythe asks, how well have the DVD Blu-ray combo packs been doing, and is it planned as the new standard or just every now and then?
I think it depends, because a lot of times when we're asked questions, it's usually an all or nothing. We don't always have approval to put out these combo packs, so we'll try to do it as much as possible. They seem pretty popular, and whenever I talk to people, the reception has been really positive, just having both different types of formats. But we're going to try to do it as much as we can. But I can't guarantee that every release will be in a combo pack format.
Okay, actually, that about wraps it up. That's all we've got. Thank you guys so much. That was very enlightening, and I know I learned a lot. So thanks a lot.
Oh yeah, thank you. Thanks for the invite. I'm glad I could hopefully share some little bit of insight.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Sure thing. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Clary and Matt for coming on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a little rating, a little review. We'd appreciate it. And hey, see you all next week.
Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants of this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.